Hey. Wow. Okay, let's do some more. You know, I had a thing that I wanted to talk about. I don't know where this will eventually go, but I just decided I should talk about it anyway while it's kind of fresh in my mind. So I wanted to do another column for Lit Reactor. I don't know if I've really talked about how that works. I write columns for this site, Lit Reactor, right? And the way it works is, halfway through a month, we'll get an email from the guys who run it, and they say, hey, pitch us your column ideas for the next month. And I've kind of made a habit of pitching three at a time. Just because I figured, you know, they were usually picking two. I think the first month I did it, they picked one. After that, they picked two, and lately it's been three. You know, because I think I've been doing a good job. I've been putting in the work, I'll say that for sure. And so I, you know, always kind of thinking about, like, well, what am I going to do next month? You know, it's kind of a, it's, you know, it gets stressful because you're just thinking, what am I going to do next month? I'm already thinking about January, but, you know, I haven't even written December yet. And one just went live today. It's November. And one of the ideas I had, though, was to write about manifestos, which I'm not sure. I'm sure there's a definition out there, you know, that's the accepted definition. If you look in the dictionary, which is dumb, though, because I gotta say, most of the time when it says, you know, oh, Webster's defines this as that, it's like, yeah, but I don't think anyone who actually knows about it would say it that way, or I don't know if they'd even agree with what that says, right? So, when I say manifestos, I guess, to me, here's what a manifesto seems to be to me, is a piece of writing that's either autobiographical or sort of strongly espouses a viewpoint and written by a person who we've decided is crazy. You know, I have a friend who's a counselor, and we don't use the word crazy as counselors, but again, you know, I don't know. I'm getting a little tired of, like, redefining words all the time, like what's okay to say and what's not. I mean, crazy, I understand that for some people the word crazy has a very negative connotation, and I guess it's not a good connotation that I have when I use the word crazy, but I don't think of crazy and bad as being the same thing. I mean, maybe it's like the word fat. If you call someone fat, to me it's like, well, someone can be fat. That doesn't make them bad. It's just they're fat. You know, this person's crazy. And I guess the good thing about writing about or talking about someone who, like, shot up a school and wrote a manifesto, it's hard to argue that you can't call that person crazy because they did a demonstrably crazy thing, right? So the idea of, like, hey, don't call them crazy is a little bit like, go fuck yourself. If that person's not crazy, then no one is crazy, right? So, basically, to me, it's an memoir, autobiography, or sort of a here's how society should work document written by someone who's crazy. Or possibly a dictator, I guess. But exhibits some crazy behavior. And I thought maybe a cool column, or a good column, would be actually read some of these documents. Because in a way, I'm sort of fascinated, especially by the one I actually ended up reading, which is the thing that Elliot Rodger wrote. My Twisted World, as he titled it. I'm fascinated by the fact that these documents exist. You know, like, the Unabomber has a manifesto, right? That's probably the most famous. When you use the word manifesto, probably people go with that. Or the Communist Manifesto, which I would guess is, I haven't read that, but I assume is a lot less crazy. But I could be totally wrong. I don't know. I guess it depends, too, on your political viewpoint, really. Because I don't personally find communism to be a crazy idea, I guess. Oh, everyone should get, like, stuff, and no one should have to just be awful. Yeah, okay. That sounds terrible. That's not my America. everyone has a life. I hate that. So, I find it fascinating that these documents are just out there, though. That you can read about, you know, you could basically get someone's entire whole world view, and that you know that this person is someone, like, what's their credential, right? Like, the thing is, when we read a lot of pieces of nonfiction, if we read something about the economy, let's say, I think we tend to put a lot more emphasis on, like, well, who the hell is this guy to tell me what to do, right? And you're like, all right, he's a professor. Okay, he's a politician or a guy in the president's cabinet, you know what I mean? And a lot of times, those books are useful but also annoying, because honestly, you know, you read a book about climate change by a climate scientist, and you think, like, all right, well, this guy knows what he's talking about, he's right, but, you know, he's just shouting into a well. It's like going nowhere. So I don't know, I don't feel, in a lot of ways, I feel more depressed by knowing the truth, because then I don't understand what's so difficult about it. But this is like a different kind of authority, because when someone talks about their own life, like, I'm probably not going to read the memoir of your average 22-year-old guy. That is not going to be of interest to me, right? But this guy shot some people and was, you know, we were told he was crazy. So that makes it interesting, because you start to, you know, so I look up this guy's manifesto. It's called My Twisted World, and it basically is his autobiography. I mean, it starts from his birth, you know, and its sketchy details, and goes through his life in pretty exhaustive detail. I mean, it's like, I don't know, it seems like it was probably, like, between 50 and 100,000 words, which is the length of, like, a novel. I mean, it's not short by any stretch, you know? So I wanted to read this because I think, you know, part of me just thought, of course there's this small part of me that's like, I wonder what answers are in there. You know, when something like this happens, you can't help but just be like, what could we have done differently? Like, how could we have made this not happen? How could we have saved lives and all that? But then part of me was also, you know, I have a morbid curiosity. I'm not going to lie. I'm interested in that kind of thing. I'm interested in how this person would think, how he would think of himself, you know? So I read it. I didn't know what to expect, except I did a little, because here's the thing. Okay, what I remembered about this, and it's only been a year. I don't know if something else happened around the time of this shooting or what. But basically, a lot of people don't remember it. Because I was reading this, you know, I printed it out and had it like a booklet that I was carrying around. And more than one person asked me what I was reading. And I said, oh, it's by the guy who did the Isla Vista killings. It's his sort of manifesto. And they didn't know what I was talking about. And then I sort of said, I don't know, it was like a year or two ago. Shot a bunch of people. Everyone said he was a misogynist, and that's kind of why. And people sort of remembered, but not really, you know? And so I don't know what happened, but this one seems to not have captured the imagination. I think, you know, I think it could be because it didn't happen in a school, so that it didn't fall into that narrative. I think that he got his guns and he just bought them himself, you know? So it didn't really, as far as gun control measures and stuff, I mean, there was some backlash after, but I think the big gun control thing was after that Connecticut business. You know, the guy, the James Holmes guy who shot up the theater, I think was the one where we all talked about mental illness. And that's what's frustrating to me about these. And I guess I should get to that after I say what happened. This one seemed to be, and here's how I remembered it. The killer who killed because he was a misogynist, right? And, after I read My Twisted World, I kind of looked back at some of the other news articles that came out at the time that said, like, what happened and why and all that. And boy, did it make me hate online news, first of all. I have to say, so I used to really think, I used to really like Slate. I thought that was a good news site. I thought they usually were honest and everything. But they published this piece, this lady wrote this piece, and it basically, the title of it was something like, Misogyny Kills Men Too. And then it was about, the piece was about the Isla Vista thing, and it came out right after. But as I read it, I just felt like it was really talking about misogyny, and also, and this particular writer I don't like, because a common tactic she uses, you'll see this in more than one of her articles, she'll say, I asked some people around the office what they thought of da-da-da-da, which I call bullshit on that, because you work at Slate. Like, I don't think you could just ask people in your office about a very Slatey type of issue when you work at Slate. And then say, well, this is what people are saying on the streets. You know? I don't know. Go somewhere else. Go to someone else's office, at least. Maybe, I don't know, maybe you're in an office that's like the Pregnancy Resource Center. And then you're like, okay, well, they have a certain view on things. This is just a little shout-out to our Greeley friends. The Pregnancy Resource Center gives you free tests and free pregnancy tests and STD tests, but they are anti-abortion. Just know that. Just know that if you choose to go there. Probably don't go there if you're considering abortion. Probably go somewhere else that doesn't have an espoused, you know, way that they are going to send you on that. So anyway, I've read the article again, and after reading the memoir, I just found it to be super irresponsible, and I felt like it was written to get people to click on it. I felt like it was sort of artificially connected to a larger issue to get people to click on it. Now, don't get me wrong. I do think there is, there's obviously issues around misogyny, and misogynists are bad people and all that. But I felt like the way that it was handled in that article and others was very poor and very, I honestly thought like, oh, well, they're just simplifying it, you know, and to some extent you have to excuse that because people want a reason for things. But the more I read, the more I felt like, I think they're trying to get clicks. I'm going to talk about what I read and how I experienced that, and then we'll come back to this at the end here. So I read this thing, right? And I was highlighting stuff because I'm planning to write this column about it and so on and so forth. So I'm reading through, and like the first parts were really not strange at all. You know, it was a guy talking about his life when he was a young kid, and it was pretty normal. I mean, if anything, I would say even the first half, maybe, felt... The disturbing thing was it was so normal. Like, you're kind of waiting for... It's not a novel, but you kind of forget, so you keep thinking, like, where's the twist, you know? You couldn't write a novel that worked this way. You couldn't write a novel using this arc, because the character arc is just sort of like... There's no big event that really changes this guy. There's no, you know, there's nothing you can point to and be like, oh, okay, well, that's why. There's no A to B. He just is very strange, but not his entire, when he's a child, he doesn't seem strange at all, and he recalls his childhood. You know, there's all these little details in it that make him such a real person. And that was a struggle reading it as well, because, you know, I had some idea of what he eventually did. But he would say a lot of things. You know, I remember this one part where he's talking about... He always felt like he was smaller and weaker and worse at sports and things like that than other kids. And Elliot is his name, Elliot Roger. And so Elliot's saying that, and he says... He, using his sort of child logic, he knows that basketball players are tall. So he assumed that playing basketball is what made them tall, So he starts, like, shooting hoops in his backyard for hours to try and grow, because he thinks that will make him grow. You know, stuff like that, where you think, I mean, yeah, if you were 17, that would be a crazy way to think, but as a small child, you're like, oh, everyone's done something sort of like that, right? Everybody has sort of, I don't know, used that weird kid brain to say, like, well, this to that to this, right? I mean, and if there's one, and, you know, he talks a lot about, like, movies. His dad was some kind of movie producer, so he got to go see premieres of some movies. And, you know, it was interesting, too, because he went to see the premiere of Star Wars Episode I, and he loved it, you know. But he's a little younger than I am. So, like, he was a kid when that happened. And I think that I'm really fascinated by that, because it's like, he had his sort of innocent kid movie. Like, we all have that. We all have our sort of movie that's not actually good. But I think if Star Wars Episode I came out when I was 8, I would have loved that shit, right? Like, it's action-y. I mean, it's made for kids. But, so, you know, I think that, like, ultimately, kind of what I hate about Star Wars new episodes isn't so much the actual movies as that I couldn't experience them as a child. Like, I wish I could have seen them with a 7-year-old brain and then be into that, you know? And I wish that they had these animated Clone Wars shows when I was a kid, you know? Like, I'm not gonna get into that now, I'm just not that guy. But if they'd had it then, I would have loved that shit. So he talks about that, and he talks a lot about World of Warcraft, and he talks about Game of Thrones, the books, and how he's excited for the show and all this shit. You know, so he has a lot of normal stuff, and when he's young, he has friends, and he remembers playing with his friends. I'm also going to say at this point that in reading his memoir or manifesto, I believe what he's saying. Now, I'm sure he's left some things out. I'm sure that there are things that, you know, I'm sure if someone else told the story, it would be different, right? And that's sort of the weird thing about the manifesto, is it's like one person's story. It's the most insider look into what happened. But I have good reasons that I believe what he said, for the most part. And that's because he talked a lot. He said a lot of unflattering things about himself. He talked a lot. I mean, he cried a lot, and up until his death, you know, in his 20s, like when he was a teenager and stuff, he cried a lot, and he would just have these, you know, he called them tantrums and stuff, or he would say, this event I went to, you know, to try and be social didn't work out, and I walked home and I cried the whole time, you know, stuff like that. And, you know, he talks about when he went to see a therapist, and that at some point his family assigned him a therapist and all that, and he's really honest about it, because he's like, well, I like talking to the therapist because it's like having a friend. And at one point he had a female therapist who he thought was really attractive and all that kind of stuff, but he was like, this is a little like, I'm enjoying talking to her, but I also feel like it's a little bit like prostitution, because I'm just enjoying talking to someone, but they're getting paid. Like, I'm enjoying talking to someone on the friend level, but I know they're making money. So how do you reconcile that? To which, I mean, the prostitute comparison isn't nice in terms of, like, well, there's a difference between talking and sex, but what he's saying in terms of something that most people would look down on paying for, I'm paying for. Like, people would look down on someone saying, I pay for a friendship conversation. So anyway, he's growing up, and, like, here's what's really weird reading it. When he talks about the past, when there's, like, two voices that narrate at least the first half of the story, especially when he's pretty young. There's sort of the narrator, we'll call him, who is the one who's kind of trying to be in his own mind a little bit and trying to go back to that place. And that person seems very pleasant, very sort of nostalgic, and really misses the past, you know, has a strong desire to recapture that past. But at the same time, yeah, those parts were really sad. Because you're just like, wow, this is a real guy. Like, as much as we might not like him and what he did, and, you know, I wouldn't ever say, like, hey, you know, people whose kids got killed, you should be nice because this guy was, like, I don't know, fuck that. I'm not the one to tell anybody how to react to the death of their kid. But, you know, if you read it, it's very hard to ignore the fact that this wasn't a real person. But then there's the narrator voice, and then there's sort of the crazy voice. And the crazy voice kind of breaks in from the present, you know, when the manifesto is being written, and just, you know, he'll talk about a nice memory he has. He'll be like, oh yeah, I had this friend. It was my parents had a friend, and they had a daughter, and we would play together, and here's what we did, and da-da-da-da. And then he'll say... Then the crazy voice breaks in and says something like, little did I know that women would be such a trouble for me in the future. You know what I mean? And all my misery would come down to interactions like these. So that crazy voice would break in. And I took those crazy voice times and just said, like, all right, well, there's the crazy voice. I'm just going to move on, though. I'm going to just, you know, sort of ignore that, right? Because it wasn't even revisionist history. It was putting an entirely new narrative on top of the narrative that I was actually reading. So then I started to get worried, because honestly, halfway through, I felt like this guy sounds like me and everyone I knew. In, like, middle school or junior high. You know, when you're in junior high, I'm going to say as a boy, just because I don't know what it's like as a woman. It might be exactly the same. It might not. I don't know, so I don't want to speak for that. And I know all boys aren't this way, but many are. And many boys are like this. They want, like... sex, or hand jobs, or whatever. They want to make out with a girl. And the weird thing and the sad thing is, you know, I don't think that who the girl is matters a ton to them in the moment when they're thinking about it in the abstract. Now, when it actually happens or that kind of thing, I think it would matter. But, I'll speak from my perspective. In terms of, like, if I was going to get a hand job in junior high, right? I didn't have enough self-esteem or, I guess, desire to sort of pursue that actively or to pursue something like that. Like, it didn't seem realistic to me. I just thought, like, well, that's not something that I do. That's something that, you know, the cool kids are doing. But if for some reason... like a genie showed up and said, hey, someone in your class is going to give you a hand job. I don't think I would say who would be my first question. I think I would say probably, what the fuck, how might be an earlier question. how does a hand job work exactly? Does she have to stand behind me so it's like my own hand when I jack off, so it's all oriented? I would have more questions before who. And it's because, I think in that context, I didn't value women as people. Now, this has changed a lot, okay? This is a long time ago. We're talking about, like, almost 20 years at this point. So this has changed a ton, and I don't feel that way, and I'm not proud of it. But I am telling you, in some respects, in the sexual realm, like, I don't think a young boy sees female peers as people in that way. And I don't know. I don't know what it is. I can't say it. Say what it is, you know? Is it like, oh, well, we're taught by society not to think that women want sex, or we, you know, and I gotta be honest, when I was that age, I didn't feel attractive, and I'm pretty sure that I was not attractive. Like, I don't know who would have given me a hand job or why. You know, this is the thing, though. I mean, I'm kind of laughing about it now, and even then, in a weird way, it was funny. Or maybe how I dealt with that kind of feeling was, it's funny. I mean, the idea of talking about these things to me was funny, or thinking about that stuff was funny, because it was so unrealistic, and because, like, you feel very not in control of that situation in a lot of ways. I think as a young, nerdy guy, you don't feel like you have any sort of control or purpose in your romantic life. Like, I would feel that I didn't have any agency there. You know, whether or not I pursued someone or how or what methods I used to pursue somebody, I mean, that sounds very clinical, but, like, I didn't feel that I could pursue somebody and be successful. I didn't even feel like I could, let alone be successful. Let's just throw that out and just say, like, I didn't even know how or what. If someone said you had to, you know, you're the male Cinderella and you have to get a hand job by midnight, how would you even begin? I'd be like, I don't know. I do not know. I would just probably cry on the phone to, like, a male friend and be like, can you just jack me off so I don't die? Because I'm in a bad genie situation. I just need some help. Like, that seems like the most likely way for me. Or at least maybe say, like, okay, it's, you know, it's 10 a.m. I'll give this the old college try. But, you know, I need you to be on standby starting at about 8 p.m. Okay? I'm sorry. I don't know how else to make it happen. We're all in a bit. This is a bad scene for everybody. I wouldn't prefer it either. Okay. So that's talking about, I think if I had kept a journal from that age, there are certain ways I felt that were not sensitive and would seem just crazy and misogynist. And it's to me a very textbooky definition of misogyny. You just don't think of women as people. Although I would also say I didn't really, you know, I didn't have a lot of good skills when it came to thinking of anyone as people. You know, I wasn't thinking about other people in my class or, you know, your teachers. I wasn't thinking about the teachers in school, like, saying, it would never occur to me at that age to be like, you know what? This is just a guy with a job. You know, I understand. Maybe he doesn't want to teach me about the fucking planets, but he has to. So, you know, maybe he had a shitty day today, and that's why we're having a shitty class today. Or, you know, this is him on his worst day of the year, so let's just ride it out. Let it go. Like, that would never occur to me. So, I don't know. I think it's a weird time of life, right? And a weird, difficult time. And then it's a difficult time to look back on, too, because I think a lot of us probably feel shitty about things we did or didn't do. And also don't know why at that time we didn't understand the simple things. You know, like, I didn't understand the simplicity of, well, just talk to a, just, a girl is a person, so just talk to a girl like a person and see what happens. I mean, I don't know. And if you want to see someone romantically, look, find someone who you like as a person and then think about seeing them romantically. Do, you know, do it that way. Instead of trying to reverse engineer it and be like, well, get a hand job somehow and then hope that the person is not awful. I mean, then, you know, also think, well, the only person who would give me a hand job would have to be crazy. So maybe I shouldn't be pursuing someone who's not crazy, because then that's not going to work out for me. Like, don't do that. I don't know. I'm saying a lot of don't do this, don't do that. But what I'm saying, what I really want to say is, at that time, it's hard to be a good person. And I'm not excusing the fact that I wasn't a good person, and I know some people were good people. I wasn't. Elliot Rodger wasn't either. But I would say he was as good a person at that time as most, based on what I read. I think that's what I want to say, is that it's still the norm. And the norm isn't good either. I'm not defending the norm. I just think it's very odd, because he was normal. But then something happens, and I don't know what it is, but it seems like he doesn't really grow out of that. And as the story progresses, you know, he kind of like cuts back on high school, and he talks about getting bullied a lot at school. And it, you know, assuming what happened was true, he did get bullied quite a bit in school. Part of that, too, I wonder if that's part of why we didn't talk about this more. Because I think that was a time, and it's still happening a little, but I feel like that was a time when we were like, hey, don't bully people in school. Hey, it's not cool. Don't be a bully. You know. And, yeah, it sucks. I don't think people should do that. Although nobody was saying, which I thought, I didn't know if it would be such a bad thing, but nobody was saying, like, hey, don't be a dick to other kids in school, because they may come and shoot you. Like, that might happen. You know, I'm the guy who was Chandler on Friends, okay? I cannot change gun laws. Obviously, that's not going to happen. I'm Chandler from Friends. That's not really in my purview. But what I can tell you is, someone might come to your school and shoot you. Nobody's going to be able to protect you. The law isn't going to protect you. So the best thing you can do to protect yourself is not be a dick. And maybe it won't work. I'm not blaming the victim and saying, oh, they deserve what they got. But I'm just saying, if you've got a choice, a day-to-day choice to be a dick or not be a dick, which you will have, and you will have this choice to make every day, hundreds of times for the rest of your life, whether you're pulling out in front of a car, or cutting somebody in line, or whatever. Whether you're like this asshole who was at the grocery store when I was there last night, walking through the aisle, parks his cart on one side, and then walks to the other side to look at some shit, and you're like, you're blocking this whole fucking case here with your cart, and you're not even looking at what's in the case. What the fuck? You're blocking a whole section. Whether you are that guy or whatever, just make the choice to not be a dick as much as possible. Especially directly to somebody that you are going to see every day. And you're in a very intense situation when you're in school, and it's intense for everyone. So the less tense you could make it, the better. I'm Chandler from Friends. So he had a shitty experience. He kind of reduced school a lot and all that. And then, you know, he went to like basically a GED program and finished way early and had nothing but time to screw around. And that's when things started to sort of get weird, I think. He started he really spent a lot of time at this time in his life trying to figure out what made people popular and cool. Like, there are lots of times in the book where, you know, he takes up skateboarding, and it doesn't seem to have a lot to do with enjoying skateboarding, but because he's like, well, people like skateboarding and skateboarders, I'm going to be a skateboarder now. Which he did, and it seemed to have some success, you know. Or he took up, and then he's like, but then they were all playing hacky sack, so I had to practice for hours in my backyard until I got decent at hacky sack, and then I could be cool. Which, again, is something that I'm like, I don't think that's necessarily wrong. Like, I don't think that he's... I think he's right to struggle with that. I think it is a struggle. Like, when you're young, and there are some kids who are cool and some kids who aren't. And that's just a thing. And I think as an adult, you can kind of tell which ones are which. But, you know, I don't know if I could say why they originally were or not. But it is a real thing. And it's very baffling. And you sort of think like, well, I'm wearing the same clothes as them, basically, and I'm doing the same things they do, basically. Why am I not cool? And, like, I don't have an explanation for that. Some sociologist is going to have to explain it to me. So it's kind of sad because you're watching him do these things and he thinks like, I'm trying very hard to be cool and make friends, you know. And then after he finishes high school, he goes and just reads at Barnes & Noble all day. And he's like, I was just sitting there reading and I was always hoping that someone would just come up and talk to me. Like, someone would be my friend, or, you know, someone would just see me there and be intrigued and want to talk to me. And, like, I don't, you know, I haven't spent months of my life doing that, but there have been times in my life where I've been sitting somewhere or doing something, but, you know, and it was kind of subconscious, but part of me was like, God, I just wish someone would fucking talk to me. You know, nobody. I had this experience, like, years ago, but, like, I don't know, I didn't have a girlfriend for a long time, and I had some friends, but, you know, whatever, and, like, this female friend of mine, I don't know, we were leaving or doing something, and she hugged me, and I had, like, this reaction, like, I almost started crying, and I realized it was because I hadn't touched another person in, like, months. On any level, you know what I mean? Touch somebody's hand or whatever, like, months. It had been that long since I touched another person. And it was it was weird. And, you know, I guess in my life, like, I feel like I had some of the same experience as this guy in some ways. But the way I reacted was just different. I just sort of, like, shut down. Whereas he became very obsessed with the idea of pursuing it or... Like, to him, it became a very serious thing, and to me, it was just kind of hilarious, I guess. I don't know. I should probably stop comparing myself to this weirdo, because then that gets weird later. Very shortly. So, this is when he starts, when he's doing all this reading and all this shit, when he starts kind of, like, coming up with these theories about sex and love, and he talks about everything he talks about, it gets annoying when you're reading it. You know, as a piece of writing, it gets annoying, because everything is about, I wish I had a girlfriend. You know, he's in like Paris with his parents, and they take this long trip to Europe, and they go all these places, and he's talking about how beautiful it is, but then he's like, but it's pointless, because I can't share it with a girlfriend. And you're like, Jesus Christ. You know, yeah, you think that and whatever, but, like, let's not go so far as to say pointless. Let's just... I had that thought one time. I was somewhere on vacation, and it was, like, it was really nice, and it was pretty. And I was like, this would be nice if somebody else was here, too. And also, I guess, I did think, like, I'm kind of sad right now because, like, this memory and this place is happening for me right now, but not anybody else. Like, no one else is here with me experiencing this. And so it's gonna be over, and then that's it. It's gone. Like, that's the end of it. But I don't feel... It's weird because he felt so strongly that he was missing out on so many facets of life just because he didn't have a girlfriend. And the more you read it, the more it starts to feel like he still doesn't see a girl or a woman as a person, a girlfriend, whatever. It's like a status symbol. But it's not like he's saying, like, if I had a girlfriend, everyone would think I was cool. He really does want a companion of some sort, but he never really talks about the qualities of his companion. He's like, oh, I fantasize about, I like tall, blonde girls. But he never really talks about any of their qualities or their relationship qualities or anything like that, which is sort of bad, you know, and that's also sort of misogynist. But, like, he doesn't really see other people as people either. He doesn't really talk about other people's qualities very much. It's more of how they relate to him. You know, does this person nice to him? He talks about his younger brother, who's like a baby or a toddler, and he likes the younger brother, but it's only because the younger brother looks up to him. Like, he says directly, I like him because he looks up to me. He's one of the only people who looks up to me and respects me. And you're like, well, that's not, I don't know, what does that mean, really? Does that mean anything? So, as it goes on, it gets crazier. And then he goes to college in Isla Vista and stuff, and that doesn't work out for him. And he has these incidents, you know. He starts like dropping classes because what happens is there'll be a couple in the class, and he feels like when the couple is being couple-y, like holding hands or whatever, it's like a personal affront to him, and he can't stand it, and he leaves the class. He'll just walk out, and he drops the class. And this happens 3 or 4 times. You know, and it's like, that's where the crazy comes in, big time. I mean, the crazy thoughts is one thing, but then this is when it starts really affecting his life. And not only that, but he's being very explicit about the fact that he feels that their actions are directed at him, or, you know, designed to make him feel like shit, almost. And then he starts acting very strangely. You know what I mean? He starts, like, talking about how he's destined for great things. He says that a lot towards probably the last 25%. And then he talks about how the only way for him to be happy is to be a millionaire. Because he figures that's the only way he's ever going to get a girlfriend. Because he's like, well, I'm not attractive. I'm not cool. I have to be rich. That's the only way I'm going to have any kind of a life. And so, you know, he comes up with this idea for a while to write a book and then a screenplay. But then he's like, but then I discovered that, you know, you don't make that much money. So I quit that. And he's like, and he only has like a couple sort of jobs throughout the entire thing. And at one point, his mom tells him to get a job. And he's like, it had never even occurred to me to have a job and make money. And when you're reading that, you're just... And this is when he's like 18, 19. You're like, it never even occurred to you to have a job. It never even crossed your mind. That's so weird. And he starts like... And, you know, he thinks that certain jobs are beneath him. Like, he gets this job that turns out to be janitorial, and he works there for one day. Stuff like that, you know. You can tell he's very entitled. That's for sure. He's very, you know, if something goes his way or doesn't go his way is a big thing for him, even as an adult or an adult-ish person. And it starts to get, you know, he starts talking about this millionaire stuff more, and then he starts talking about how he was pretty sure he was destined to win the lottery. And he starts buying lottery tickets, and he, like, you know, meditates on them and just stays locked in his room for a couple days. And then he'll look it up, and he lost. And then he's in California. He starts driving, like, a few hours over to Arizona to play their Powerball because it's, you know, the California whatever lottery is only up to, like, 3 or 4 million. And he's like, well, that's not going to change my life. That's not enough. He needs to win like 100 million or whatever, you know. So he makes like 4 or 5 trips over. He just drives to Arizona, gets Powerball ticket, and then drives back. And this becomes like a thing he does quite a few times. And each time he's like 100% convinced he's going to win. Right? Which is sort of crazy. And also, it's kind of tangential, but I'm like, the lottery is kind of evil, isn't it? Like, this is why the lottery is evil. Because there's nothing that prevents anyone from buying a lottery ticket, right? It's not like, oh, well, you're a felon, you can't buy it, right? It's just like, whatever, buy one. You'll love it. It's great. These are great things to have. And then, you know, I think we kind of excuse it because we're like, oh, the money goes to education. But it's like, yeah, the money of this crazy person. I mean, he's driving fucking to Arizona from California to do this. Like, that's obviously... And he's sure he's going to win. It's not fun. It's not fun the way gambling can be fun, where it's like, oh, my grandma got me a lottery ticket when I was 12, because that's fun, you know? You're like, oh, maybe. It's sick. It's weird. And, you know, he's got... Basically, towards the end of the book, he's like, well, I kept trying the lottery thing, but I figured it was going to either be that or Day of Retribution, which is what he's calling this thing. You know, and he kind of takes some steps. He buys a gun. He goes to a shooting range once or twice, I think. He buys a couple guns, and knives, you know, and he has an entire plan that apparently didn't work out, because he was gonna go kill his family or his roommates first, then his family, then he was gonna take his dad's car, which is an SUV, and then use it to kill, you know, run people over and shoot people. And then he wanted to have two guns because he wanted to shoot himself in the head with both guns to make sure he died, because he did not want to go to jail or prison. So at some point, he decides this is the only way out of his horrible life. And by now, he's saying, like, I'm going to be a virgin until I die, you know. And he is saying horrible and misogynist things at this point. You know, he's saying, like, women only like dumb idiot jock men and stuff like that. He's saying that, you know, they're denying him things, and he doesn't understand, because he's like, well, I'm just as good and smart, and I have the things that these guys have, but I'm not, you know, liked. And he even has this incident towards the very end. He goes out to a party, and it's like a Halloween party, and he tries this a couple times, like on Halloween. One Halloween, I think, he goes out and he finds a party on Facebook, basically, and just goes there, and he pays $5 to get in. And then he goes in the house, and it's like 10 stoners who all know each other sitting around smoking weed. So he, like, leaves immediately. You know, he cries and runs home, literally. And then another one, he goes to this party. This is kind of right before the end. And he goes into this party, and he's trying to talk to people, but it doesn't work. He's like, you know, they can tell I'm a weirdo, and they hate me, so I basically, then he goes up on this sort of rooftop patio, and he tries to push these ladies off the rooftop patio, and then, you know, he gets pushed off and hurts his ankle, and then next door he gets beat up by a bunch of guys, and then he, you know, they take his necklace, and all this stuff happens. So, yeah, like, he kind of, I mean, he was crazy, and he was acting badly, and he was also in a bad situation. I mean, it's a lot of shit, but, you know, he basically decides, like, this is the only way out for me. There's no living my life like this for another 50 years. Like, that's not happening. But what's really weird, he decides, you know, he's going to kill all these people. And, like, leading up to it, over and over, he says he doesn't really want to. And he says he feels like it's the only option at this point. Like, he doesn't even see any other possibilities. And he's like, I don't really want to do this. And he says he's afraid to die, all that kind of stuff. But he's doing it. You know, he's committed to doing it. So it's really strange, because there's, like, still a part of him left that's normal and can think normally, you know, and it thinks, like, I don't want to do this. Like, this is a bad idea. It's almost like somehow in his head he's committed to doing this, and it's like he feels that somehow cosmically people know he's committed to it, and if he doesn't do it, it's like he's wussing out or something. You know what I mean? Like, you know how they tell you, oh, if you're going to lose weight, tell people you're on a diet or tell people you're exercising, because then you're accountable. It's like he did that accidentally or something, and now he has to go. He feels like he is obligated to go through with it. So he does. You know, so the memoir ends, and he's basically like, well, I'm going to do it, and here's what's going to happen. And the end. You know, and by the end, you know, he does espouse a theory of, like, basically women should be in breeding camps and should only be allowed to make children with the smartest people, and, you know, only sex should be outlawed as recreation and all kinds of stuff like that. He also, however, on the theme of not respecting people as people, he says some crazy racist shit. If it matters, he's half white, half Asian. And, you know, he talks a lot about, like, he'll say, like, his sister was dating a Mexican guy, I believe. And, you know, he basically hates the guy and talks about what scum he is and how he can't believe his sister's dating a Mexican guy. Or, you know, he gets really mad if, like, a black person is dating, white girl, you know, a white blonde girl. That makes him really upset. He really does not like other races either. He moves in at one point. He's living with two Hispanic guys, and he hates them. And he, you know, he says horrible things about them, like how they're animals and stuff. And he says something real slavey about a black guy that he knows, you know, that he talks to. And just like, I mean, the racial stuff is real bad too. And I guess I want to just say that because I think that, like, okay, so then I go back and read these articles that came out after the killing, and this Slate article in particular, where it was just like, they pulled out the misogynist things he said, and I would say it was from the last 10 to 20% of the manifesto. I mean, it became, it seemed to me that they had not read the manifesto in its entirety. They probably read only part of it. And I get it. Like, you have to put a thing out. You know what I mean? People want an opinion. They don't want to just, well, I don't know. Part of me is like, I know you want to give people something and say something about this. But part of me is also like, how come you can't say, as Slate, hi, we're Slate. We want to do a respectable job with this. We have a 100,000-word memoir here. Everyone's got it. It's available online. You can just download the PDF. And we want to read it before we'd say what we're going to say. So here's what happened at the event. And before we talk about it, you know, we want to read this. It's out there. It's responsible journalism. It's not like we have to go digging through a million pages of court records. You can read this in a night. And we are going to take today and read it and then get back to you tomorrow. Instead, it's like these same quotes and these same things and incidents and quotes are pulled out of the memoir in multiple articles, right? So it really just seems obvious that people are all telling the same story, which is this guy killed people because he's a misogynist. And he was a misogynist, and he was bad, and he killed people. But I think there's like a real danger in saying just that. Because I think that what happens is what they're doing is kind of saying, well, this guy was a misogynist. So, you know, me, Pete, I can be like, well, I'm not like that, so I don't have to worry about this. Or, like, yeah, let's talk about misogyny. And that's, and here's what was disturbing, I guess. I felt like after I read the Slate article then and now, and read the manifesto in between, I felt like what happened was the article was written, connecting it to a bigger issue of the day, because more people would click on it. Nobody wants to click on just saying, like, here's our coverage of the same story you've already heard. It really felt like they were just saying, look, let's connect this to a larger issue. Let's be, let's do that, and then more people will click on our story and comment on our story and share it. You know, and we don't really care if what we say is right or not. And here's the other thing that really bothered me about it. I don't think when you do a story on something like this, I think you should take the ads off your page. I really do. Like, I don't think that page should have ads. You know, let your shit stories handle the ad space. Like, that doesn't seem right to me. And as I'm looking at it today, and I assume the ads change, you know, over time, like that they're just ad spaces and they change. And it was obviously the kind of ad. So there's a kind of internet ad that happens. I don't know if everyone knows about this, but what it'll do is you basically have a company and it picks out some of the keywords from a post and then puts an ad that it sort of tries to think is relevant on the side. So, you know, sometimes these are hilarious because, like, it'll be a story about a car accident and then they'll have a car ad on the side because it's like, oh, it talks a lot about cars. The computer doesn't understand how that might be in poor taste. And that's kind of what happens here because, like, it's talking about all these people who are killed and stuff. And what's the ad? The huge banner at the very top? Prudential Insurance. So, you know, you might get shot today. get Prudential Insurance just in case. Maybe, how's your life insurance? You know. And I just felt like that was fucked up. And I also think it's fucked up because I know how advertising works on YouTube, for example. So if I'm Prudential Insurance, I pay YouTube. I don't necessarily get to pick where my ads, what it goes in front of. So, for all I know, my ad's going in front of, like, a respectable thing, or maybe it's going in front of, like, you know, a girl gets her bikini ripped off by a masked assailant, and then it just shows that happening. And, I don't know, it's supposed to be funny, and you're like, we do not endorse that. I don't agree with... But at the same time, you're like, well, that's how the ads work. And, you know, also, as the creator of content who opts into ads, I don't get to pick what ads are on there either. So I don't get to say, for example, like, what if I do a video and it's just all about how I think the higher education system is fucked up? Well, I don't get to say, no. University of Phoenix, no. You cannot advertise before me. I don't want to be associated. Like, that right is gone. So I think that that's a fucked up thing that happens with ads. And it's because of laziness. And it's because that's just the easiest way to make money. Is if they don't worry about it, then you can just make money. And that's what they're doing. And I think that's wrong. And I think if that's what you're going to do, you shouldn't have fucking ads on things where you're, like, telling the story of a shooter, a killer. Right? Or, you know, where they basically just post the video of one of the dads. There was a dad whose kid was one of the victims, and he was very outspoken about gun control. And it was good, you know. He basically was like, well, my son's dead, and you guys are arguing about whether or not this is a problem, and I'm telling you it's a fucking problem. And meanwhile, there's like an ad off to the side, and it's like, I don't think that's right. You're basically putting an ad on this guy's speech about his dead son. Like, that's okay. You think that is okay to you to do that? That's fucked up. That'd be, why not put an ad in the middle of the manifesto? So you can just say that. So anyway, I was really upset, I guess, after I read it and then I went and reread the article. And I'm picking on this one Slate article just because I remembered it from before. And also, I don't even think I mentioned this, but this is kind of the incident that spawned the not all men, yes all women discussion, debate. Which I still sort of have a problem with. I don't have a problem with yes all women, but not all men. And here's why. Like, I have read articles where it says men do this, men do that. And I think that's really unfair. And maybe that's just a white man who's in power complaining about something. And you know what? I accept that. I don't think I'm not here to change that. You know, I am who I am. But I don't understand how that's not a relevant argument, I guess. I feel like if you replace that with any other group and you tried to make the same sort of statements, whether they were true or not, would be unacceptable. Like, I don't think you could say that about a racial group. I don't think you could say that about an economic group, you know. Poor people are ugly. Like, how does that sound? Awful. You know, and then you could say not all poor people are ugly, and that's a relevant argument. That's like a, yeah, quit being an asshole and saying all poor people are ugly. I mean, obviously some poor people are ugly because some rich people are ugly too. But, okay, so when you say not all men, but then it was kind of like, if you said not all men, it was like, you're not paying attention. You're wrong. You're just trying to deny that this is happening at all. And that's not at all how I felt. Like, I did not feel at all like I want to deny that men perpetrate some bad shit on women. And, you know, men's behavior warrants a second look. And I identify with that. And I think that's true. And I think that's right. But if you write an article and you just say men do this or that, I do have a problem with that. I do. Like, you need to find a better way to express, to categorize the group you're talking about, right? Like, if you're going to say men are doing this, men are catcalling women on the street. Well, I'm not. And most of the people I know are not. So for you to say all men are doing something is wrong. I'm sorry, but it's wrong. And I do feel like saying not all men is right. Like, I don't know. I'm not defending the men who do it. I'm defending the men who don't and who want to behave. And I think that, like, if I can speak for the men who are in the not all men category, I guess, I think we want to be part of the conversation and we want to be allies and we want to be a positive force. And it feels sometimes like we're just cut out of that discussion because it's like, well, you're part of the oppressive group. I don't know. I read this quote and I have such mixed feelings about it. But the quote was basically like, you know, if you're a person, but you're told you're this way and you're told you're shitty and you're told that you do these bad things and you're told that you don't understand and whatever, like if you just get told that over and over, how long until you just say, fuck it, and just live that way? Because honestly, the way that I'm told is that, you know, I have all the privilege, and the way that I'm told is that my opinion's the only one that matters, and because I'm a white man, and the way that I'm told is, like, I make way more money than everybody else, and all that. And if no one wants to listen to me, that's not true. If no one wants to hear about how I make less money than many of my female counterparts, and if no one wants to listen to the fact that my opinion doesn't really matter, and I'm not, like, you know, it is not, my life's not hard, but it's not easy. You know what I mean? I don't think it's a lot easier than anyone else's life. But if no one wants to listen to that, then at what point do I just say, well, fuck it, I guess I should just take advantage of what's available. If people are going to assume this about me anyway, why not just be that then? I don't think I wish in my darkest times, I wish I had that capacity. Like, I wish I just didn't care. That I was like, oh, fuck them. No one cares. But I do care. And I think that was why it was so complicated when I finished reading this and when I read the articles and when I did this, because I felt like there was something horrible happened and there was a perpetrator. And, of course, the perpetrator was more complicated than he's a misogynist, we dust our hands and walk away. Like, that doesn't work. And obviously it doesn't solve the problem, and this is like the whole not all men thing. Because if we could dust our hands, say he's a misogynist, and walk away, that only works if every killer is a misogynist. And then we can say, okay, well, now we know. But there are killers who aren't misogynists, and there are killers who are. And there are misogynists who are not killers. Like, these Venn diagrams do not cross over in a significant enough way that I can say yes. And ultimately, when I finished, I think that that's what's so frustrating. Is I finished, I read the whole thing, I read the articles, and I felt like I had a lot more questions than answers. I didn't know. If you said, why did he do this? I would say, I don't know. I think he was crazy. I think that he did have a hard life, and in some ways. And it's really easy to look at his life and be like, well, his parents had money. You know, he had a lot of advantages going for him. It wasn't hard. But I don't agree with that. I think it was hard in a lot of ways. I think he had some mental issues that I don't care to categorize because that's not something I'm good at or know about, but he clearly had some mental issues where he had a hard time seeing people as people and empathizing, and also, you know, the way he tried to crack the code with popularity, it's like everything's an equation, right? If I do this, this will happen. If I do that, that'll happen. He had a hard time relating, and that combined with the difficulties, and then, you know, it resulted in a real bad situation. You know, the wrong or right things happen to the wrong or right person, and then you get a bad result. I don't think if you read it, and if you knew him, you know, a lot of people who knew him in the aftermath said they weren't super surprised. Like, it wasn't like, oh, he's a normal guy, and he snapped. So I guess that's the thing, though, is if you ask me why he did it, though, I don't think I could definitively say. And I felt like a lot of people were definitively saying, here's why I did it, and here's the problem. Here's the larger social issue. And I just feel like that's wrong. And I am tired of... I'm tired of, like, reading the news and saying, like, and people saying this or that. And it's like, you don't know. You don't know either. And, like, when's the last time you read a fucking news story after a murderer or a killer or somebody like that, and the news outlet said, we don't know? You know, and just like all these other incidents that have happened, all these other tragedies, we don't really know. Like, there are similarities, there are parallels in every case, but there's not one thing that unites them all that says, like, okay, this is what, this adds up to that, and then this happens. I know that's what we all want badly, and we all want resolution. I just wish, like, one person, one, like, news outlet would step up to the fucking plate and say, like, well, there are predictive factors, and this person had these predictive factors, and, you know, but they also had some intervention, and whatever. We don't know. We don't know. Obviously, we haven't cracked the code, because if we had, if anyone had, this would stop happening. Because we would be doing something. But, you know, I guess... And that's, like, the real... That's true frustration number one, is, like... The news sources are just so irresponsible in saying what happened when it's not a good picture of what happened. And then also accepting ad dollars on their crazy prognostications. I think that's wrong. But number two is I do get frustrated because I think about we aren't doing shit. I remember there was a few years ago when a kid got killed at my high school because he was riding in the back of a truck during lunch and the truck rolled and it smashed him and he died, right? And after that, the school instituted this policy. You had to have an ID, an orange pass, because our school colors were orange and black. And if your pass was orange, it meant your parents signed a permission thing that said you could leave campus for lunch. If it was black, they didn't. So you could not leave campus for lunch. You know, and this resulted in all kinds of fun shenanigans, like kids hiding in each other's trunks and shit like that. I did a trunk ride once. It's not fun. I'm not going to lie. It's kind of harrowing. And I'm very uncomfortable. You'd be amazed how much a seat in a car absorbs, like, the bumps and the grinds. You know, this is one kid died, changed the entire school district. How they do their lunch program, how they had their ID program, all that stuff. It completely changed. One kid. Meanwhile, I mean, you have these gun things, right, that happen at a school. What changes? What do they do? You know, for a while at our school, they made you have the IDs you had displayed. But, I mean, that doesn't address the issue in any way. It doesn't address the school's liability, nothing. All it does is say, like, you're a student. And most of these things are perpetrated by the students, right? Like, that's or people who should be there. So I think I get mad, and I get mad about... This was what makes me so mad about, like, gun control. I don't understand. How many fucking times does it have to happen before someone says, like, well, why don't we try it? Why don't we try and see? Because if we try it and see and it turns out these just disappear, then fuck, maybe that's a good idea. Maybe that's not a problem. I just listened to This American Life, and it was about this high school, you know, where they had all these gun deaths in Chicago. And they were, you know, how did the guns get there? And they found, like, the hugest chunk of the guns all came from, they were legally purchased. What people would do is they'd legally purchase them, sell them to somebody else, and then just report them lost a month later or stolen. Just be like, someone broke into my house and stole it, and it's gone. You know, that's it. And then it's gone. And then people do whatever with them. You know what I mean? And it's like, how many guns do we need? How many guns does one person need to buy? How many guns should one person be allowed to buy a duffel bag full of guns at a gun show? And why? And should we have no right to monitor what happens with those? And should you have no responsibility as the person who bought those, you know, to make sure they don't get stolen? Like, where does your responsibility start and end with that? I don't know. But I think we got to do something, because the answers I've heard are not satisfactory. You know, it's like, oh, give teachers guns. Or have a cop at the school. And it's like, I don't know that that's going to, you know, these, if you look at the tragedies that have happened just out in the public, shootings or whatever, like, rarely does someone with a gun save the day. Like, I've never heard, like, gunman saves the day from other gunmen. Or, you know, they'll talk about, people need more psychological help. Which I don't disagree with. Like, it does seem weird to me. Okay, you have to take a vision test to get your driver's license every time. You don't have to take a fucking... There's never in your life, you know, in school, you have to have vaccinations. They give you a hearing test, an eye test. Never in your life do they say, like, you have to go to 3 sessions of therapy. Like, you have to. That never happens. We make all this other shit mandatory, but that we don't. How the fuck does that, you know, and I think people would balk at the idea of mandatory therapy. If we just said every American needs to do 3 sessions of therapy every other year. You have to go 3 months in a row and just do it. Just because we want to make sure you're not a crazy. I mean, why? What if we did say that? What if we had you go 3 times? If you purchased a gun, you have to go see a therapist 3 times. You know, and then you can renew your license that allows you to buy a gun. How about that? Does that seem like a problem? Can we limit, like, can you only have 15 guns? Is that enough? Like, how about each individual can have as many guns as they can shoot at one time? I mean, you can only shoot 1 gun at a time. 2, but that's very irresponsible. Having done that myself, I can tell you it's very dumb and irresponsible and it doesn't work. I mean, how many guns do you need at one time? And it's not about, I honestly don't care if someone has 25 guns in their house. That's not the problem. The problem is the laws are loose enough that it allows for someone to buy 25 guns and then, quote unquote, lose or have them stolen, and then someone else gets them. That's how they're getting out. That's the problem. You know, I wish I could just say, like, oh, it's because people are robbing the gun factory, but that is not happening, right? Or I wish there was a way to just say, oh, all the ammunition is being illegally manufactured and whatever, but it's so much of it's legally produced. So it needs to be, that's the only way to limit it, is to, you know, change the law. Because the law is just accommodating for all this illegal bullshit. That's the fact. Anyway, that's a long rant about a long topic, I guess. I don't know. I read it. I felt strongly that the reporting on it was bad and lazy and that, you know, nothing has changed. And that's just sad. It's really sad. I don't know. At what point are we just stop being surprised that, you know, oh, 5 more dead kids. Well, okay. That happened, right? But yeah, no, I don't know. Bus your kids to a nice school. I'm sure it won't happen at a nice school. Except, you know, that it does all the time. You know, a safe place. I'm sure there'll be many safe places. You know, just keep counting on that, I guess. Or I don't know. Just when your kid's dead, take solace in the fact that, you know, we have our guns that will keep Great Britain from invading. If it wasn't for that, they would be here in no time. We'd be fucked. I don't know. It's just, it's gross. It's all just so gross and bothersome and sad. But here's the other thing. Here's what I would say if you're still, for some reason, just listening to me ramble about this. You know, next time something like this happens, and it'll happen, or when these sorts of things happen, like, look into it yourself if you can. Like, if there is a manifesto, you should read it. If you want to comment on it, or if people are asking you about it, or if you want to talk about it, read that shit. Don't read the fucking Slate article on it and be like, oh, well, now I know. You know, don't comment on the Slate article unless you've read the manifesto. Because then you're just being an idiot or sounding like an asshole. Don't say not all men and then say something misogynist. Because you're ruining it for the rest of us. Like, men are ruining it for me. Okay? I don't count myself among men. I can't grow a beard. I don't like sports. And I don't hate women. So I don't know what I am. But I'm not that. So I don't know. Maybe I shouldn't. I should just not call myself a man. You know, I don't know. I don't ever say, like, well, as a man. I could say as a boy, because I was a boy. And I wanted a hand job. Just a simple hand job. All right. Well, that's enough. I'll see you guys next time. Oh, so sweetly, nice and lonely. Nice and lonely. She acts just like she don't need me. But I ain't so lonely.